All right, so Holden texted Tim. We're going to give Tim a minute, and then we'll get started.
Okay.
The main things we wanted to talk about was on the last call, Tom had some questions about Good Ventures, just to understand more about it. So Carrie was going to say a few words about that, and then answer any questions you have. Then I wanted to just give a quick update on what we're thinking for giving season. And then depending on the time, because hopefully we'll be able to just keep this to an hour, just give a quick research update on what we've been spending our time on and what we intend to spend our time on in the near future.
Great.
Great. So do you want me to start, or are we waiting for Tim?
Why don't we get started? I think that makes sense.
Okay, so I'm not entirely sure exactly, how much to say. I'll just give a quick overview of Good Ventures, what Good Ventures is, what we've done to date, and who Dustin and I are for just a few minutes, and then you guys should hop in with questions to the extent that you have them. So Dustin was the co-founder of Facebook, as you probably know, and more recently a company called Asana. Before that, he was an econ major at Harvard, though he famously dropped out with his roommate Mark Zuckerberg 2 years in to start Facebook. He had the very remarkable and unusual experience of becoming a billionaire essentially overnight. And, that experience forced him to think very early on about what he would do with the money that was well beyond anything he, could reasonably expect to spend on himself and his family, or even from a very early age, he knew that he wanted to give wealth away. Well before I met him, well before he signed the Giving Pledge, I guess that was the end of 2010. But signing the Giving Pledge together, I helped him write, his letter to the public about his intentions to give in late 2010 was a really clarifying moment for us, and it was about the time I decided to leave my job as a reporter for the Wall Street Journal to work on our philanthropy full-time. Dustin's working more than full-time now at his second company, which is called Asana. It builds software that helps teams collaborate, and he thinks it's the best possible thing he could be doing for the world with his time. And he also wanted to start giving. He really wanted to start giving early. We really think the forces of technology and globalization are going to change the world we live in so rapidly in the next 30 years, and we want to do as much as we can with our giving to accelerate that change and make sure the direction it takes is positive. So that is why we're doing what we're doing. I had the great pleasure and fortune to meet GiveWell before I left the journal to start Good Ventures. And I joined the board before I left the journal to start Good Ventures, right before that. Holden and Ellie and more recently the rest of the team have been really, influential, really, really more than anyone besides Dustin and me, I'd say, have had a hand in shaping, what we're doing and how we're thinking about things. Let's see. So Good Ventures was started in the middle of last year. Its mission is a very broad one, to help humanity thrive, and our activities, as defined for the IRS, are sort of officially to, invest in and promote cost-effective interventions for saving and improving lives, advocate for policies to protect and expand personal freedom, and increase transparency and effectiveness across the social sector. But in reality, we're still, very open-minded. We don't have any set program areas yet. And the question that guides my work is how do we do as much good as possible with our philanthropy in our lifetimes? And, you know, I sometimes wonder if I would have come to that question had I not, you know, kind of simultaneously read The Life You Can Save by Peter Singer and met GiveWell, because in the subsequent year, over hundreds of conversations, you know, I found very few people who even thought that was a reasonable question to be asking, you know, a reasonable question to be guiding our giving. And so, you know, I feel really lucky to have been exposed to the idea and to have found kind of partners to work with on that question very early on. And I guess, you know, the two, I'd say we don't have program areas, but we do have a learning agenda. And the two prongs of our learning agenda are, one, to help GiveWell, support GiveWell in its research agenda, and push that forward, you know, as quickly and efficiently as possible. And the other is to co-fund projects with the foundations whose work we most admire as a means of learning, you know, how they make decisions, how they prioritize, how to spend their resources, how they kind of source and choose, oversee, and evaluate projects. So the majority of our grants to date have been to GiveWell-recommended charities. We also recently co-funded our first project with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It's a project around malaria control in Myanmar. And I guess a third approach but that's sort of been taking a back seat to date is, you know, starting to dip our toe into the policy arena and learn about how philanthropy impacts policy and where we might have opportunities for outside impact and generating more humanitarian value for the world through policy advocacy. So it's just, Good Ventures is also currently just me. I am really looking forward to GiveWell's moving out to San Francisco and working even more closely with them. And happy to answer any questions that you guys have.
Cool.
I think you just answered my only major question. I mean, that was really helpful, Carrie. I was just going to ask, you know, how are you staffed and what's your operating budget? But it sounds like you're the staff and operating budget is probably just, what, sort of time and materials and travel expenses for you?
Yeah, operating budget is very small right now because I work from home and it's just me. And, you know, I do have, obviously, intentions to build an organization over time, but it's something, you know, I feel strongly about not rushing into, in part because, you know, I've tried to write job descriptions and the description of what I need changes so quickly as our learning and sort of learning priorities evolve. There's so much that still feels like it needs to be done by me directly. And, you know, also working so closely with GiveWell means I'm not in a rush to create positions that would be redundant relative to the capacity that GiveWell already has. So it is you know, an intention of mine, but it's not something I want. I don't want the tail to wag the dog, in a sense. I used to feel kind of a need to really build out an organization relatively quickly, but I really want the work to guide the organization that we build, if that makes sense.
All right. So, I wanted to move on to the other topic of giving season. One quick thing, just, you know, Carrie mentioned this briefly when she spoke, is, you know, this isn't an official board meeting, but, you know, we'd love to be able to share this audio publicly if possible. So, you know, just keep that in mind. And if there's anything you're saying that you'd prefer that we remove from the audio, we're happy to do that. Just let us know, you know, either like on the audio right now or after the fact. Cause, you know, it's helpful for us just to be able to share kind of the internal things that are going on here as broadly as possible. So the other two topics that I was going to just give you guys a brief update on are our plans for giving season and then a little bit about research. But before we do that, I also, you know that, you know, you may have questions that you've been waiting to ask. So are there any other things that, you know, you just wanted to jump in and ask about what's happening at GiveWell now, or updates on things we've talked about previously? Or would you prefer that we just move on with the planned agenda and then leave some time for those types of questions at the end?
What's the timeline for relocating to San Fran?
The plan is January 2013.
And do you know yet which employees would come with you and which wouldn't?
Everyone is going to San Francisco. Everyone's going to be out there except for Natalie, who is currently working remotely from Mississippi because she moved there with her husband when he joined the Air Force. So she's remote now. She's remaining remote. But the one nice thing is the move. Everyone who was a part of GiveWell, including the two people we hired last fall who joined us in July, are all moving along with us to San Francisco. We're not losing anyone because of the move.
That's great. And so is there anything else that move would affect? Like, will we have a rotation of board members? Because I know you've got some New York financial folks on the board. Like, are they still game to stay? Are there other relationships that we need to worry about, or will it be pretty seamless as far as you can tell?
We expect it to be pretty seamless. I mean, we do a lot of the board stuff over the phone already. And, so to a large extent, a lot of that will stay the same. Both Holden and I suspect other staff are going to be back on the East Coast pretty regularly. And so, I mean, even as an example, we have held this research meeting at our offices in New York a couple times a year. I mean, we intend to continue to hold those and time them for periods when Holden and I are back in New York City. And so in all those ways, I think our visits to New York are going to be pretty busy because we'll have a lot to do, but we don't expect that the move will significantly affect our ability to maintain the relationships we have in New York. Obviously, the move will reduce the ability to, like, make new relationships at the level that we hope to be able to in San Francisco, but, our current bet is that the value of trying to form those new relationships out there is stronger than the value of trying to build new relationships here.
Right.
Can I ask one very charity-specific question?
Yeah.
I've gotten on the Village Reach email distribution, and they made a note in one of their recent emails about it sounded like they were trying to sort of create sort of a meta service for logistics management for health system delivery in some of the countries, in addition to the ones they've been working in. I don't know whether that's something you guys have looked at. It sounded like one of those kind of sort of higher leverage opportunities that could be interesting if it was done right. And I'd be curious if you guys have looked and had any thoughts about it.
Yeah, I mean, we remain in really close contact with Village Reach because we're following the project that GiveWell donors provided so much funding for and following its progress. And that's something we have published about, we're going to continue to publish about, and we've also talked to them more generally about other funding priorities. With this type of project, I think the way I'd describe how I look at it is that, there's kind of this whole piece of global health, or there's many pieces of it that are something beyond the types of things that we've looked at most closely in the past. And so I'd characterize the things we've looked at most closely in the past as direct delivery of proven cost-effective health commodities. So that's things like deworming pills or bed nets. Those are the commodities that our two top charities deliver right now. And what Village Reach is trying to do is something much harder, potentially, or not even potentially, like if it works, would likely be much more beneficial. And when we were we to try and consider that other type of thing, I'd want to make the effort to consider it along with all of the other activities that many organizations run that would be along the same lines. And so that does that make sense? I mean, basically not to instead of saying, oh, you know, here's an organization, we know them, they have this idea, say, you know, there's a lot of organizations who are considering this question of how can we improve health logistics and health coverage to reach the people who are not already being reached. That's a really difficult problem to solve that takes innovation and takes a new solution to a problem that people have known existed for a long time, and just do a broad consideration of all the different approaches to that problem. So that's the context in which we'd be looking at that, and that's not something we've done yet. Okay, so I guess for the time being, I'll just move on to some of the other topics. So, you know, one of the things I just wanted to give a quick update on is what we're planning for giving season. You know, the last week of November and the month of December are when we see the way higher web traffic, the vast majority of the donations going through our website. You know, often we've seen something approaching like 25% of the year's donations in the last couple days of the year. And, you know, also the time when there's the most general interest in philanthropy from media, et cetera. So, you know, this year we're not planning to, do anything really extraordinary, but we are taking this time to make a lot of to kind of hit the specific items that we think have potential high ROI, and also make changes to our website and presentation that, you know, we kind of wait around a whole year, and then we prioritize doing those at this time. So beyond the what I'd call like tweaks to the website, the biggest things that that we're doing is, you know, we're trying to reach out to media that seems most likely to write about us. And so, you know, Dan has been real helpful with this. Dan put us in touch with the New York Times journalist who wrote an article about us 2 weeks ago. We got a lot of good attention from that. You know, we have a list of a few people that we've spoken to before that we're going to reach back out to again. And then, you know, Dan's also offered to get us in touch with a couple more people. So we hope that will bring some good attention from the media for us. It's also the case that just like every single year that we've been around, there's been more media reaching out to us, asking to talk to us. And so just, you know, in the past week, we've talked to the Miami Herald and Money Magazine. I suspect that this is the type of, these are the types of inquiries that, you know, we'll get more of as giving season progresses. We're not planning to do any like blast media outreach. We've tried that in the past through press releases, through press release companies, and it's something that just has not had a very high return for the time that we've spent. The other kind of area that we're thinking about working on it with giving season, and this is also something that, you know, Dan has offered to take the lead on, is thinking more critically about how donors perceive the value proposition that GiveWell offers them, and trying to better communicate that the potential we offer them via a video. And so Dan was going to look into that. We talked to him about that. I talked to him briefly about that last week. But you know, that is something that Holden and I have shied away from spending time on in the past, because we just haven't really had the we don't think we have the ability to do it well. But I think Dan is someone who, you know, has the background and the context to do it well, in case we can get it done in time. And that could be, you know, a big benefit to us if it all works out well. The sort of last piece of this, in a sense, is just what's happening to our top charities. So, we kind of do this big refresh every year of which charities we recommend people give to, because this is the time of year when people give the most. So we anticipate that AMF is going to remain in the number one spot. And then, you know, we're not entirely sure what's going to happen next, but at this point what we think is going to happen, and this depends on us working things through and answering some final questions with the organizations, is that SCI, which is our current number two organization, and GiveDirectly, which is the cash transfer organization, which has been one of our standouts, will both be kind of like the next two that we would recommend people give to. And then, you know, in sum, those three organizations will be the ones that we recommend people give to, with us giving the strongest emphasis and recommendation to people giving to AMF. And, you know, at this point, I think we would very roughly say that, you know, we'd want like 60 or 70% of the dollars to go to AMF, and then, you know, roughly the remainder to split between SCI and GiveDirectly. And, you know, we'll set up the top charities page of our website, which after the homepage is the second most visited page to communicate, you know, that ranking. Holden, is there anything you'd add to that description?
No, I mean, one overriding message is that we're not planning anything big outreach-wise, and, you know, we have a lot to do. I think this is the right call. I don't think that there's anything big that would have necessarily huge returns, but we are doing the things that we talked about, so, yeah.
Hey, Ellie, one thing that, this is a small issue, but one thing that dawned on me after our call the other day was, I was struck by the fact that you said Google, with its Google Grants program, has been so generous that we actually don't even fill our quota a lot of months. I wonder, is there somebody we could find in the vein of a volunteer who has, you know, a lot of search engine marketing experience that could just take a look at what we're doing and figure out potentially ways to max out more of that spend, and if there's anything that can be done to optimize our current strategy? I'm just way out of my league with that stuff, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Terry, you might know someone, or we might know someone in our network who could jump in and do a couple of weeks worth of work.
We actually contracted with someone a while back when we first got this grant, and I think it's a good point that we should just I'll just ping her again. Like, she basically, she's the one who did a lot of the work to set up our current account.
Yeah.
To max out what it, or our account when it was a lower level. And we were in touch earlier in the year, and it just, things didn't quite all come together, but I'll definitely just send her a quick email and see if she's up for doing some work in the next month or two, because now would definitely be a great time for her to do it.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Is
yeah,
there anything, this is just a total Hail Mary, but is there anything on the event front we can do on this timeline? Like, can we imagine any event where the right 20 people in a room in late November, you know, early December, you know, might provide a sudden jolt of donations? Have you tried anything like that in years past?
Yeah, I mean, we've tried a couple things like that. I'll give you a real quick overview of our history with events. I mean, we've tried various types of events that have been focused on the, like, get people in the room who might write larger checks to our top charities. You know, in some cases, I think they've been like a decent return on time and investment in the event, based on what we got out of them. But it's not something where I really see the possibility of, you know, doing that at a scale where it's going to make a big difference to our bottom line money move figures for this year. We also, you know, tried to do a relatively large event at our former employer a couple of years ago, and that, you know, similarly, we thought was, in a lot of ways, one of the best possible events we could have run, because, you know, we went back to a place where we knew a lot of people knew us. You know, our former boss, who's on the board, gave a talk at the event and said how great Giveo was and how much he supports it, and we saw very little come from that event. And so, you know, we're a little bit hesitant on the whole event front, because we've put in some time and not got the type of results that would be worth our putting in the time now. The type of events that have been pretty successful, not in terms of dollars, but just in terms of, like, I don't know what I'd call it, like, maintaining relationships with important donors, have been these research events we've held at our office in New York. And so we intend to hold that again. I think these events are pretty cool. You know, Tom and Carrie, you guys have both been to them. Dan, I guess you wouldn't have been able to ever have come to them because they were before your time. But, you know, we'll hold those events. And, you know, it's just us talking about research. I think it's cool because it, it kind of brings the community or part of the community that, that are the GiveWell fans all together in one place, or some of them together in one place at least. And, you know, I think if we could get the right, you could imagine getting the right people at the event, this thing we're already doing, that could be beneficial. So last year, or to our event in May, you know, I invited Nick Kristoff, who we've talked to a bunch about GiveWell, and he's written about us, and you know, he didn't come, but he did respond saying that he couldn't make it. And so just that, you know, that's one type of person. But I wonder if we could do the right type of outreach to get, I don't know, some people coming to this event. That's kind of a unique, interesting thing in the sphere of thoughtful philanthropy.
Yeah. Well, it's probably not something that we would be able to reinvent in the next 6 weeks, but I'm definitely not ready to declare defeat on the event front. So maybe that's something we can warm up again in 2013.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, we are going to do one of those events that Ellie just described. We are going to do one of those for giving season, and I expect it to be pretty cool. So some of the low-hanging fruit would be to, you know, to just think about who we could invite to that outside of our inner circle.
Yeah.
I mean, there
isn't a chance you would do one in San Francisco, is there?
I mean, if you thought that we'd get critical mass,
I think we'd do one. I think we're in the future. I think we'll certainly want to do them in San Francisco and New York. It's just a question of whether we get the attendance.
Right. Well, you know, you have probably a better sense than I do of how many people you could get to come to that. I think we could certainly get, you know, the most interested people in our community. But you've met a lot of people out here over the last year, and some of whom would probably get a kick out of it. And, you know, I don't know. We could talk about that offline.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, because I think there's a good chance we'd be able to.
It's also just a good way to follow up with people that we've met and just say, hey, we're going to be there. We're going to be talking about our research.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Hey, one more question on this front. I know earlier this year, and from what I understand, a lot of credit for this goes to Carrie. You had some interesting events and meetings in the Bay Area. Is there any plan in place to follow up with those folks? I mean, you sort of planted the seed in the spring, but now it's checkbook time. Are they going to hear from us again in some capacity?
I mean, we've talked about it. I think it's tricky. I mean, we're going to follow up with them. I think we're going to email them. We're going to say, you know, our top charities are out. It's giving season. Beyond that, I mean, you know, that it's a pretty soft sell, and we've had trouble thinking of a harder sell that we would be comfortable with. So I think the basic plan is to keep the soft sell going, to hope that by moving there we'll have more opportunities to be more present in these people's minds and, you know, form better relationships, and that the soft sell will be good enough. And actually, you know, throughout the history of GiveWell, the soft sell has basically been what's worked for us. So, you know, it only works with people who are really into it.
I don't know that I accept that. I mean, if people were interested enough to come to an event where you spoke and they heard from you personally, which presumably would deepen their interest, I mean, it doesn't seem intuitive to me that the next logical step is just to send them, you know, sort of a over-the-transom email rather than, you know, offering to get on a phone call with them or meet with them or hearing more about.
Well, I think we can certainly offer that. I mean, you know, what I'm saying with the emails, it'll be kind of an email along the lines of, hey, you know, we talked earlier this year, it's giving season, our top charities are out, we hope you'll consider donating, we'd be happy to, you know, talk to you further if you're interested. You know, just that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, this, in my experience, this is the kind of thing where this can either generate nothing or it can generate a lot, depending on subtleties. Like, you know, is there a plan in place? Do people know who's been allocated for them to follow up with? Are there ways you can bring in board members or supporters to also contact those people? You know, what kind of ask are you making in the email? Like, is there a reason for them to reply? Yeah, I feel like that you've got good enough contacts that I just want to make sure we do as much as we can with them.
Yeah,
I think that we agree on like wanting to make sure that we do the most with our contacts. And like one way I'd put the thing that we're going for is like the thing we most want is to you know, find and engage with the people who become like really big fans of GiveWell. Like that's incredibly important to us long term. And the thing that is like less valuable to us is just a person who gets convinced by their buddy to write a check one time because we really push them to. And so like we're just trying to set up our follow up and communication to really maximize the former and not worry so much about the latter. And so, of course, to maximize the former, that, you know, of just identifying and then communicating and building relationships with people who become big fans, like there's a lot of thought that we need to put into the best thing. But, you know, my guess is sending an email to people and offering them a chance to you know, speak again to us and making it pretty clear, like, how to give to our top charities, those seem like good starting points for that type of follow-up.
And just to sort of tie that back to Carrie's point about having an event in the Bay Area, I think there's we want to really kind of test the hypothesis whether there's a really different culture for sort of hearing the GiveWell story and for you know, creating kind of a community around that than there is in the finance community. I mean, and it may be a very different story in Silicon Valley. And so I think maybe all the things that you sort of tried in New York that were frustrating, you might want to try them all again on the West Coast and see if they work.
I agree with that. I think that's a good point. So, Dan, in response to you, I mean, we have the same concern you do about making the most out of the people we've met, you know, making the most out of those relationships, and we haven't had a lot of good ideas or concrete ideas. So we'd be happy, you know, offline to talk with you about, like, you know, hey, here's some of the people we might email. Like, you know, let's really get into, like, what should the email say? What should we offer? Like, who should get involved, et cetera?
Yeah, I'd be glad to help with that. And it might be worth trying. I mean, since we don't have a bulletproof plan, I mean, we're still at the experimentation stage. Maybe we try a couple of different things and just see
sure.
if anything sticks.
Sure.
I would be if you guys are going to do some board outreach stuff, I'm very happy to put some time in to make some phone calls and doing some meetings if it's helpful, including with people on the West Coast. So
great, thanks.
Right, and I, you know, certainly plan to reach out to each of the people who came to the two events that we held for you and maybe others, and I'd love to run the sort of substance of that by Dan or Tom or others who've tried it before and, you know, having never really made an ask and generally trying not to be kind of the pushy charity people in our circles, it would be helpful to have some advice on that.
Cool.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
So maybe we'll throw together like a first draft of what we would do and then we'll send that out to Dan and Tom and Carrie and get some feedback.
Yeah, perfect.
Cool.
So any other comments or thoughts, questions about plans for giving season?
On the picks, so you laid out the top three. Will you still keep the standout organizations, or is anything shifting there?
I mean, we're sort of – I mean, all this is kind of tentative. And, you know, as we get closer, we tend to – start thinking about all this really, really hard, and we sometimes, you know, want to make shifts. But, you know, basically, you know, we just – one thing that has bothered me over the last couple of years is that, you know, we view the top-rated charities as very different from the standouts in terms of, like, how good a opportunity it is for donors to give to. You know, there's, except in one case, which is when, you know, a donor is really interested in a particular cause, and then we just want to say, like, hey, we've done some research in this cause, it's a different type of research than we do elsewhere, and we want to share with you what our top recommendation there is. So, you know, microfinance. We have an organization we recommend if someone's really interested in microfinance. And so I think we're going to shift, like, our plan is to shift the top charities page such that it's clearer about the fact that, you know, these other organizations are not quite like this set of others that are almost as good as the best, and they're just kind of a different us having a longer list, and instead more along the lines of what I was saying, that, you know, we do have recommendations for particular causes. And so, you know, I guess one way of, you know, the way I'd put what the top charities page will look like more is people will think more that we have, you know, three recommendations in our current plan than the 10 that we have now. and we'll try to make it easy for someone who's looking for a microfinance charity to track it down. And it's just worth knowing, and if you look at this Money Moved page on our website, I mean, relatively speaking, a very, very small amount of money, you know, goes to those other standouts relative than goes to the top recommendations, where the top recommendations, you know, are getting like, you know, a few million dollars or, you know, last year AMF got around $2.5 million, SCI got close to $1 million. And then, you know, the others were getting lower amounts, like in the $50,000 to $100,000 range.
It is non-trivial, though. It was a non-trivial chunk of our money moved, and I think there will be a penalty, like a money moved penalty for DMing them, but I think it's the right thing to do. You know, another thing that I would emphasize about the standouts that, like, is part of what Ellie's saying, but just want to emphasize this aspect of it, and this, I think, comes back to the core of, like, a lot of the struggles over what GiveWell should be. Is that, like, to recommend a charity, we feel like we ought to know a lot about the charity, and we feel like we ought to be up to date on the charity, and in particular, we feel like we ought to do charity updates. A huge part of our value is you give to one of our charities, and then we actually find out what happened, and we report it, and we're honest about it. This takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work for each charity that we do it for. And so, ultimately, like, I would not be happy having these standout charities on our you know, top charities page, and advertising them and getting money to them and then not doing thorough follow-ups. And yet, you know, we have found that doing thorough follow-ups for all those charities, it's not realistic. It's way too much work. It takes away from other things that are more important for GiveWell. It, to some extent, takes away from the confidence we can have in our top charities, from finding future top charities. It also, you know, obviously takes away from some of the newer work that we're doing. And that's where I think, you know, that is where it's just an illustration of the direction we've been moving, where, like, we just want to work on finding the best giving opportunities, and, you know, you want to have something for everyone, but it's just the ROI is just too low.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, and, you know, one small thing, I like the way, Ellie, that you framed your recommendations about how to allocate the charitable giving. I mean, I'm a little bit surprised, actually, that in past years it's kind of worked out magically the way you would have advised. As I remember, just as a donor, I wasn't sure exactly, you know, if these guys were doing it, would they split money between, you know, SCI and AMF, or, you know, should most of the money go to the number one? And so we might do something concrete on the website, like the recommended portfolio or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah, we've thought about that.
Yeah, I think it's something that we should just be clear about this year, because it's definitely something that has not been clear in the past, even though we would have had recommendations to make.
It's worked out pretty close to what we would have recommended in the aggregate, but even so, like, there are people who we really wish, you know, we got the message across to them more clearly.
Right.
I also think it wasn't magic. I mean, I think part of the reason it worked out that way was that we talked to a fair number of big donors and, you know, told them what we thought. So that certainly pushed it in that direction.
Yeah, true.
But yeah.
So any other questions or comments on the giving season stuff?
Just one more thing, I'm sorry. I'm just curious about GiveDirectly. I know they were standout last year, and if memory serves, I went to their site, and they had a really impressive study set up that was going to yield, you know, exactly the kind of data that we crave. Did that data start coming back, and that's why they're getting promoted, or do you just remain hopeful that, you know, the level of transparency they're pursuing is reason enough to promote them, or what was your thinking on that one?
So the study, so the main thing is that when GiveDirectly was last year, they had never done anything. They had never, you know, it was an idea. It was a couple guys. They hadn't actually made cash transfers. And so that's what we were really waiting for, to kind of bump them up. And I would say that, you know, I would say that over the last year, they've been in operations, they've made cash transfers, they have a full-time employee, you know, they're real. I can also look at what they did over the last year, understand it, spot check it. We can kind of verify that they made these transfers. They've also collected a lot of data. Their study is underway, so it's not done. But they have some preliminary survey data they've offered to share with us. It addresses a lot of the concerns around possible problems caused by cash transfer. It answers some of the questions about how people would spend the money. So we still don't have an RCT from GiveDirectly that is completed that shows positive life outcomes, but that's not really an important criterion for this particular intervention. In fact, I don't necessarily expect the study to show great life outcomes because it's cash, and so the whole point is that people can do what they want, and you'd expect the effects to be diffuse, right? It's hard enough to get a statistically significant effect on, say, school attendance if you have an intervention that's all about school attendance. To expect an effect on school attendance when you have an intervention that could be used for school but also could be used for food or could be used for investment, I think is, you know, maybe asking a little much. And there is already a lot of literature on the effects of cash transfers, and it's consistent with this picture that, you know, generally you see increases in consumption, often increases in food consumption, but there's no one real life outcome that's either better or worse as a result of the cash transfers. I don't think that necessarily reflects poorly on them. So the basic feeling on GiveDirectly is I think, you know, they're pretty credible now. They're reasonably credible as a group that actually makes cash transfers to very low-income people, and they do really well on our other criteria. And I think that intervention is, you know, roughly as good as the other stuff we've seen, with the possible exception of the top health interventions.
Right. That's interesting. Yeah, thanks for that.
The other thing just to know about them is that, you know, when we came across them last year, they were this very new operation. And so we got to talk to them, but, you know, you can only learn so much when a group has been around for that period of time. Now they've been around a whole other year. And, you know, the people at that organization just, you know, meet kind of the highest standards that we've seen for transparency and openness and commitment to, like, figuring out whether their programs are actually working or not. And, you know, that just counts, you know, definitely counts for a lot in the you know, updating our confidence in people directing funding to them.
Yeah.
One of the things that we'd like to do, if possible, before bumping them up is go do a site visit to their activities. You know, it's possible that we won't be able to make that happen because the time frame is kind of short. But, you know, when we start talking about people moving, you know, our followers moving a significant amount of money to them, we definitely want to make sure that we've done all those final type of kick the tire checks. And we've definitely found in the past when we've done site visits to groups that we've already known a lot about, that, you know, we generate a bunch of questions that we just never thought of in New York, but we're real glad to be there on the ground thinking about them, and they lead to better research. So, you know, that's something that we hope to be able to do in the next 6 to 8 weeks.
Great.
Yeah. They're really, I mean, they're quite outstanding on the kind of, you know, the culture, transparency, evaluation stuff, and I think we had a rough impression of that before, but they hadn't actually done anything, and now it's, you know, it looks like stronger. But, you know, we'll know for sure when we do a little more work.
Anything else on this topic, the giving season topic? Or, you know, now we have 10 minutes left, so also I just want to – does anyone have any other questions? I'm happy to jump into a real quick research update, but if anyone has questions, now's a good time to ask also.
Any staffing developments?
Nothing. Nothing since we've last spoken. We have been, you know, two things are going on with recruiting. We have been recruiting, like, pretty heavily at, you know, doing undergrad recruiting at Harvard, Yale, Columbia, Princeton, and Stanford. And that means that all those schools, we've gone to the career fair, we have given or are about to give some sort of talk that we invite students to, and then we're receiving resumes, cover letters, and applications. You know, one of the benefits to us of doing college recruiting is I think that, you know, it's valuable to have the new young analysts come in. It's something we've got a lot of value from in the past, and so it seems like a reasonably good place to find talented people. It's also because the group of people we're talking to who are seniors in colleges are potential future donors, it's also a good way to get the word out a little bit on campus in a way that people who are interested in what we're offering can come and listen and talk to us and learn about what we do. And so, you know, there's nothing major going on there other than we're putting people through the process we've developed to screen potential hires. And then we're also continuing to think about our, you know, the possibility of of hiring more senior people who have, you know, more significant experience in the field and can speed up our, just our, what we do because they've just been there and done that for a long time. And so we haven't made any, like, really major steps there, but it's something that, that remains in the back of our mind as something we'd like to do if and when we can think about the right candidate, the right type of candidate for us. You know, one of the major challenges for GiveWell relative to, I think, other grant makers is that, you know, we're not yet ready to, like, put our foot down and say these are the program areas we know are the ones we're going to be on for the next 10 years. And when you're able to do that, like, if you're able to say malaria pharmaceuticals is the area you want to be in, well, then it's easier to go out and find the people who know all about that. And when you're a little bit broader and unsure, which is where we are right now, it's a little bit harder to do that. The third thing I should mention, which is something I missed before, is another group of people that we think may be promising as GiveWell employees is former management consultants. So, you know, a lot of people go to McKinsey, Boston Consulting, Bain, those types of companies out of college. They essentially intend to be there for only 2 years and then look for something else. I think something like 90% of management consultants leave after 2 years. And so we've talked to a couple of the consulting firms, all of which have a somewhat similar type of recruiting setup to undergrad, where they're really trying to help their consultants find placements so we can be there and recruit there. But, you know, that's also something that we're just at the earliest stages on. All right. I guess I'll give a real quick research update. You know, we continue to spend the vast majority, I'd say, of our staff hours on traditional, quote-unquote traditional GiveWell work. And so what that is, you know, updating charities that have been highly rated in the past, doing intervention. So, you know, that consists of getting reports of how programs have gone and talking to the charities like AMF, SCI, Now Give Directly about their future plans. And, you know, we've in Village Reach as well, we continue to work on those and publish those. Another big activity that's part of, quote, traditional GiveWell is intervention reports, where, you know, we try to assess the evidence very carefully for whether a program works or not. And so, you know, the question is like, well, do bed nets work and how effective are they? Or does vitamin A supplementation work to reduce mortality and how effective is it? So we spend a lot of time on that. And then, you know, a third big piece that is, you know, core to quote traditional GiveWell is publishing what we think about charities that we don't recommend. And, you know, often there's a lot of challenges to writing something that is not glowingly positive about any charity. And so what we're largely trying to do is just communicate that we have looked at an organization and the reasons why we have not moved forward with it and put it on our top rated charities list. And so this is something, you know, that we continue to spend time on. And, you know, we've been doing a lot of over the last couple months. And then, you know, the final area of, quote, traditional GiveWell that starts to overlap with newer work is, you know, looking into new opportunities for giving. And so that, you know, has been, like, trying to find an outstanding organization or part of an organization to which we can direct funding for things like immunizations or nutrition programs. A lot of that work has involved talking to, you know, groups like UNICEF, which are very involved in these different areas. And, you know, that is another thing where we spend a lot of time. I think we've learned a ton about the opportunities for funding. And that's not going to change what our recommendations are this year, because we haven't yet been able to identify something that we're going to strongly recommend, at least in the next couple of months. But it's still something that I think is, you know, is possible over the next, you know, early next year. Then there's all the, you know, other, you know, newer stuff that we're looking into. Probably, you know, the different components of that are, the major one is co-funding, where we're just going to some of the major foundations and you know, including the Gates Foundation that Kerry mentioned, Good Ventures has already co-funded a project for, and asking them for the ideas that, you know, that they have that they think are most promising. And so we see that as a good way both to learn about aspects of international aid that we haven't explored ourselves, but, you know, maybe in the type of projects that these foundations implement, but also projects that are outside the field of international aid where the foundations who work on them have a view about which types of projects are most worth funding. And so the, you know, to this point, I'd say that co-funding is one of the activities in the newer GiveWell work that has taken the most of our time. You know, the other activity that has, that took a lot of our time was our investigation of the Cochrane collaboration for a potential recommendation. They're an organization to which we recommended and Good Ventures granted $100,000 earlier in the year, and we've continued to analyze them and try to learn about them. We're going to be publishing more about them in the near future. The short story is that we're not planning to recommend them by the end of this year. I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they're a large, complex entity, and it's just taking us some time to find the right people inside this organization to help us navigate and figure out how to determine what additional funds are used and, you know, how to evaluate what ends up happening with the additional funding. And that Cochrane collaboration is the group that you know, what they do is aggregate many research studies to then present the, you know, a bottom line position on an intervention. And they largely focus on medical literature. It's something that, you know, we've relied on in our research and you know, a lot of, it's an incredibly valuable, service. We've done some work on other areas, though it hasn't taken up the same amount of our time. So we've, you know, looked into, Alexander has done some work looking into global warming, and we plan to publish a blog post on that soon. Holden has done some work, beginning work on, the cause of biomedical research, to which we've had a little bit of a back and forth on our, research email, our public research email list, which, if you're interested in, you can go check out. But I think those are the main ways that we've been spending our time over the last, 6 months or so.
So do you guys think about some of these new areas as the kinds of things that if your research seemed to find that they were promising and worthy of support, that they would bubble up to your recommended charities list in 2013? Or do you think about these as being on a fundamentally different track?
I think a little of both. I actually think probably more the fundamentally different track argument. Like, I think the thinking here is that we are basically trying to learn. Like, I think the way that I would put it is that if you talk to most people at foundations, they take a very different approach from.
Uh oh. Can anybody hear me?
I can hear you. I think we lost them. I'll ping them and let them know.
Must have had an hour deadline or something.
Oh, he's okay.
Hey, I think we just cut out, so we're going to have to just call back in. I'm just on my cell phone, so we're just going to call back in. Can you hang up? What? No, just, yeah, I did. Hang that thing up. All right, one sec. Hey, this is Holden. I'm on Ellie's cell phone. He's still working on getting us dialed in, but I'll just answer the question using the cell phone, then I'll switch back. Everyone hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yep.
I can hear you.
Okay, cool. All right, so I'll do this quickly. The traditional Gival approach has been kind of find things that they're proven. We can read the academic studies. We can see the evidence. Find places where we can put in more dollars and get more of that. I think it's an interesting approach. I also think there's very few of those opportunities in the world. The more traditional approach that I perceive foundations as taking, and which I think has something to recommend it, is kind of take an area. Don't try too hard to understand everything about it. Don't try too hard to find the best opportunities. Just kind of talk to people, talk to everyone, fund a few things, and by funding them, you will get to follow their progress in a way that you couldn't if you didn't fund them. And so by doing that, you learn a lot. And then over time, you will kind of have more grounding and context in the sector and be able to, you know, develop your own opinions and things like that. We're kind of doing a version of that, but I would say it's a version that's much more, it's tailored to this idea that we're open to any cause and trying to pick a cause strategically, which kind of adds some extra challenges. So, you know, instead of pick a cause and kind of fund the charities in the cause, it's almost like we've Good Ventures has gone to a lot of the major foundations, and treated them as the groups to kind of co-fund with and work with and learn from. So, you know, you go to a foundation and you say, what are you doing that you're excited about? And then they tell you and you kind of co-fund with them, not because you've determined that it's the best way in the world to do good, but because it's an excellent learning opportunity. And so that's a lot of what we're thinking. And it's kind of, you know, getting into a cause, getting to know it, using funding partly as a tool for learning. And then the challenge on our end is kind of doing that very broadly without stretching ourselves so thin that we learn nothing, but doing it broadly enough that we're able to kind of look at lots of different kinds of things and start being strategic about where we want to go narrow instead of just kind of picking a cause and sticking with it.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense to me. I mean, it almost reminds me of like a corporate R&D department where you're going to do a lot of basic research, and some of it will go nowhere, and some of it will be interesting, and some of it will ultimately spin out as a marketable product, which I guess for us would be a top-rated charity. But the main goal is just to make ourselves smarter, you know, consistently over time.
Yeah, and the product could be a charity. It could be a project, right? It could be, you know, here's a funding opportunity. That's why we changed our mission statement. We changed charities to giving opportunities.
Yeah, no, I understand.
And there could be some where we say, look, this is a $100,000 giving opportunity. You know, it's time sensitive. Like, you know, we might focus on major funders and trying to get it funded. And there may be some where we're like, here's something that kind of the more the better, the bigger the better. Let's try and raise money for this using our top recommendations vehicle, and you know how that's communicated to donors, and that's all possibly far in the future. But that's kind of, you know, how I see this is we're trying to attack the broad question of how do I give as well as possible. That takes a very different approach, I think, from the approach we've had to date to really do that thoroughly. And that's, I think, the question our donors ultimately want us to answer. And so if we get there, you know, we're trying to get better and better at that. I think donors are happy for the moment that we find proven cost-effective, scalable things. But I think a lot of people wonder about other causes, and I think it's realistic and important that we'll be more intelligent about, you know, why we're in the areas we're in and why we're doing what we're doing in the future.
Right.
So it is, I mean, at this point, it's a little scattered, and I think that's pretty much okay. We have changed course multiple times. It's hard to kind of, in a very neat way, to sum up everything we're doing, although we have just said what we're doing. But, the kind of feeling is we picked a couple causes that we think are just, you know, especially interesting, especially important to understand. We're also, you know, trying to get organized on kind of having a broader set of causes to do a shorter level of inquiry into. And then instead of looking at the cause level, you can also look at the funder level and say, who are the biggest, most interesting funders and what can we learn from them? And we're doing some of all three, although mostly the first and third.
Right.
And I think the meta research cause is especially interesting because it seems like it's very new, where, like, you know, we found two funders who are also interested in it, but they're just getting started too, so that provides a very different kind of experience from working with someone who's got a 10-year head start on us.
Yeah. Well, anything else?
Not on our end. Anything else from you guys? I guess I should say before that, like, one, we hope to hold these about once a month. I think they're helpful to check in. So does this time, like, basically work well for people Monday nights at 6 Eastern? If so, we'll probably just, you know, shoot for, you know, November 19th or November 12th or one Monday early in November to try to make this happen again.
Yeah, it works for me.
Cool.